Hello, everyone. This is episode 28 of the iPhone Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Gary Ng, along with Justin Louis. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. How are you doing tonight, Justin?
I'm awesome, and it's a great day to be recording a podcast. It's Steve Jobs' birthday, and there's finally a whole bunch of news to talk about. We don't have to scrape the bottom of the barrel for the latest rumor.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of news going on lately, so let's get into it. Let's start off with this sort of inside look at Apple's annual shareholder meeting, and there was a Q&A there with Tim Cook just sort of summarizing what was new at Apple. But the big item that came out of this meeting was that Apple's North Carolina data center, this $1 billion investment, is actually going to be used for iTunes and Mobile Me.
Yeah, we've been hearing about this mythical data center for years. It's great that it's finally coming online. It lines up perfectly with some more stories we're going to get to about Mobile Me. We've heard rumor after rumor about Apple negotiating various things with the record labels. So it's Apple set to finally get serious about the cloud, and we should be seeing the benefits of it by this summer. So I'm excited for that.
Basically, in the meeting, there were corporate approval votes, one to approve the company's existing seven board members to vote them back in, and that one passed. And other comments by Cook basically, like I said, summarized the success that Apple's had. Mac sales have been up 31%, twice what the company was selling just 3 years ago. What else did he point out? The iPhone business has doubled over the last year to 40 million units. The iPad had $5 billion in revenue in the first month with 7.6 million units sold. Apple is rolling right now. The stock price is about 70% higher than what it was compared to a year ago.
Yeah, it's a good time to be Apple. And it's only going to get better with iPhone 5 and iPad 2 on the way. So
now here's, back to this data center and Mobile Me. The latest rumors are that Mobile Me, the retail boxes that people can buy in Apple stores, have been pulled off the shelf. I know that you can buy Mobile Me online, but you can also buy it inside Apple stores, and that's when you get a nice little thin packaging that says you purchased Mobile Me. And the update has that Apple has reportedly notified resellers that the company has discontinued the retail box. And also, if you look on the online store, Mobile Me has been removed. But the 60-day trial is still available.
Yeah, so you put those two things together, and that tells you that if they're still doing the trial, the service isn't going anywhere, but they're not going to charge for it anymore, which is a great move. The thing a lot of people don't realize, especially with the iPhone and the iPod, a lot of people are fairly new to Apple. When Mobile Me first came out, it was actually called .Mac years ago. It was revolutionary. I had a bunch of friends and coworkers and people I worked with on various projects, and we could share things via iDisk, which is kind of like a not so good version of Dropbox, but at the time it was revolutionary. And just over the years, the service hasn't really improved. There's been all these free alternatives from things like Dropbox and Google that Apple just can't really justify charging for it anymore. So I think if this summer they not only improve the situation, which they have, the new calendar, the new mails much better, and they make it free, it's going to be better for everyone in the long run. More people will use it. It's just one more reason to deal with Apple in their ecosystem. And if they want, I'm sure there's still ways to kind of charge for premium service. I've always felt that that's how they should do it. Give everyone the basic things, get them using, get people used to syncing over the air and sharing their Safari bookmarks and all those advantages, and then just charge for things like extra storage. So it looks like that's what is going to happen, which I'm excited about because I do like Mobile Me, but it just wasn't worth that price.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I mentioned this on the blog. Mobile Me, $99 a year. But now there are a whole bunch of free cloud services that can do a similar job and it won't cost you a penny. So I think it is, you know, time for Apple to remove the $99 and to make MobileMe free. We've already mentioned that Find My iPhone, one of the key features of MobileMe, that actually went free last fall. So, I mean, there have been many changes to the online MobileMe kind of layout and the interface. So this is expected. It's coming. It's just a matter of time. Moving on. Let's move on to some controversy with these in-app subscriptions. Apple recently introduced their new App Store subscriptions policy, which involves Apple taking a 30% cut from publishers. And basically, Mac Rumors got a hand of an email that was apparently from a typical Steve mail. It was an iOS developer, and he wanted some clarification about whether or not these in-app subscriptions would apply to software as a service apps, which are basically free apps that are just, you know, an app version of a free service, such as a Dropbox, or is it only going to affect publishers of sort of like, you know, magazine or news media? Basically, Steve's reply was, we created subscriptions for publishing apps, not software as a service apps. The email hasn't been verified, but, you know, it could be Steve, it couldn't be, it might not be, but the issue here is that apps such as Dropbox, Netflix, you know, they are free. However, they do have subscriptions that people pay for outside of the App Store. Now, part of the App Store subscription policy means that they need to offer a similar way for users to subscribe within the app, but Apple will take a 30% cut.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't ever get the impression that it applied to those to begin with, so I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't true. And don't quote me on this completely, but I think Tim Cook did verified that email. I think he did say that the current subscription model was done for publishers and not software as a service. So I didn't think Dropbox or those type of things were ever under assault. As I predicted last week, I think we'll continue to hear about this for the next several weeks as these publishers are upset that they've kind of lost their free ride. I think most of them will find that their subscription increases will go up so much further than that 30%. And Apple isn't stupid. If Netflix or RDO or some type of streaming content doesn't even have those kind of margins to work with, they're not going to kill that portion of the App Store. There's people who are fans of that service. Could you imagine if you couldn't get Netflix on your iPad or your iPhone? That would be a pretty compelling reason to go to, say, Android. So Apple's not going to let that happen. We're in the early days of this, and I think it'll all sort itself out. And in the long run, we're the winners because we'll get better prices and easier to deal with. I love the idea of just being able to hit one button, subscribe, done. Don't want to subscribe anymore, cancel, done. That's the way to do this.
Yeah, I think the way Apple is doing it is smart. It's also protecting consumers. We have the choice of opting in to give our information to these big publishing companies, and they end up usually selling your information and you just end up getting spam. But now you can easily opt in or opt out. So, I mean, I don't think it does apply to these, you know, free services such as a Netflix or a Dropbox, but more towards like actual publishers such as, some sort of newspaper app, something like that provides content, not sort of a service app. But like I said on the blog, that'll be cleared up in the summer when there's a deadline will appear. I think it's the end of June for apps to adhere to this new in-app subscription API.
And you brought up another interesting issue there with the whole being able to opt out. That's kind of got less coverage in this, and I find that very interesting because if you're going to release a magazine or a newspaper on the iPhone, iPad ecosystem there, and you're charging $5-$6 an issue, then it's no problem. But if you're charging, say, $1 an issue or a couple bucks a month or a week, and you're trying to supplement that income with advertising and you can't get people's information, that is a problem. I understand why people don't want their personal information out there. But at the same time, as consumers, you and I have complained numerous times on the podcast about the content industry being so far behind the times, but they do need to make money. So I'm concerned about the customer wanting it both ways. You don't want to pay, but you don't want them being able to advertise to you. It's kind of got to be one way or the other. I'm hoping we eventually see a situation where everybody just has, here's the ad free price, here's the ad supported way. I can watch the latest episode of Modern Family, pay a buck ad free, or watch the commercials. To me, that's the perfect way. Someone doesn't want to pay, they get the commercials, vice versa. So that'll be interesting if, because most people are going to opt out. If you have a choice, how's that going to affect the marketing and the advertising? That's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, definitely. Next story here. This one is interesting because once again, the iPhone 4, it won another award. This time it's the Engadget People's Choice Award, which is voted by readers, people like you and I. The iPhone 4, smartphone of the year, and also display of the year. So no surprise here. The Retina display is pretty amazing, and like you and I would both agree, the iPhone 4 it's been the benchmark for smartphones, and it's no surprise that it would take down these awards.
Yeah, it's the best phone out there, as I've said for 28 straight episodes. So people don't need to hear me wax poetic again, but yeah.
Yeah, I think
it's the right phone won.
I think you think it's the best phone ever. moving on. FaceTime HD is now in the Mac App Store. The whole FaceTime HD issue started when today Apple released a refresh to their MacBook Pro laptops, and one of the leaked packages revealed that there would be a FaceTime HD camera. FaceTime is now available in the App Store. It was released in the Mac App Store to customers. It's 99 cents, and it will allow you to have FaceTime in HD. Now, I think the normal evolution would to be bringing FaceTime HD to the next iPhone and even possibly to the iPad, which will be announced on March 2nd. There's a media event on March 2nd. So FaceTime for the Mac, some history to this is that the EyeSight camera on most MacBooks, the newer ones, even before the refresh, they were updated to a new higher resolution 1.3 megapixel camera, but this was quietly updated by Apple. They never advertised this. So all along, some of our EyeSight cameras have been, HD ready. And it only now are we, bearing the fruit of it through FaceTime for Mac.
Yeah, the whole FaceTime app for the Mac has kind of been an interesting story right from the beginning, because they teased it during one of the events. I can't remember which one. And then everybody thought, well, if this is going to be a feature of the new operating system Lion, it would be weird to make people wait that long, but they don't usually introduce new features. Then they, right at the end of that keynote, said, oh, and by the way, the FaceTime is part of the beta. We're doing a beta release, which Apple doesn't often do that many public betas. So that was a little weird. Now you wonder, is it going to be part of Lion just built in, or will you still have to buy it? It's strange, but I'm very interested in the fact that they decided to release it this way for 99 cents. Soon it was available. I downloaded it. I don't really notice the difference from the old version, but again, it's cool that it's out. It's interesting that Apple is charging 99 cents for it. We're hearing the same rumors as last time that it's some kind of accounting reason. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but either way, it's going to be an interesting experiment for Apple.
Yeah, FaceTime HD in the Mac App Store is the number one paid app right now. So in the Mac App Store, so most definitely people are downloading this. It's only 99 cents. It's it'd be interesting to see if this new FaceTime version, the actual release that's out of beta, will it be HD only on the new MacBooks, or will it also work with our existing EyeSight cameras.
Well, I'm sure the app will support as much as the camera can do. So if it was artificially, say, keeping the bandwidth and everything lower, I'm sure they will take that restriction. But I don't know what the current MacBooks have. I can tell you from one standpoint, I know people with MacBooks and I know people without, and the built-in EyeSight cameras have always been very good. Even when you watch other video podcasts, you can always tell the people who are using some cheap Microsoft or built-in Dell kind of, they've always been good. Even if the resolution isn't that high, Apple's always had a great camera. So I'm sure the old MacBooks will spit out whatever the physical camera is capable of, and the new ones obviously have a better camera and they'll have the real good quality.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to try it out. I'll probably pick it up a bit later. Moving on now. Today was also the day that Apple released its first beta of Mac OS X, 10.7 Lion. We saw a few sneak previews of Lion before at a previous Apple event. But now this new beta is out, and there are some features that have been available. There's also something called AirDrop and File Vault. Right now there's some of the new features, automatic document saving, just some new full screen enhancements, just different UI designs. It'll be definitely really interesting to try this out. People say Finder works a bit different than before. But yeah, what do you think of Lion? It's going to be coming soon.
I can't wait for this. I'm so excited for the new features. The other thing that they announced today that I don't think they had said before is multitasking is going to work just like it does on the iPhone and iPad now. It's going to save state. So when you close an app out or you reboot your computer, and then the next time you open that app, it's just right back to where you are, right back to what you were working on. And I think I said when we first got the Lion announcement, the iPad and the iPhone has changed the way I work. I every day want my computer to work more like my phone. For instance, I used to be the guy who would have 5 different windows open. I would minimize the windows. I like to have all these different windows. Now I've been running a lot of my apps full screen or as close to full screen as I can. Now I find myself grabbing the little thing in the corner of my Mac and trying to make everything full screen because I'm used to it looking that way on the iPad and the iPhone. So anything that makes the Mac run more like iOS, I'm all for. I know there's the people out there who are afraid of getting some of the limits in there. I don't think Apple's ever going to do that. But the more they can, if something really works well for one, why not do it? I think Lion OS X is already by far the best operating system out there, and Lion, I think, is going to be the best version yet. I guess if you don't like some of the ways things work on the iPhone, then you're probably scared of this release. But me personally, I love the way things work on the phone and the iPad, so I'm hoping more of that comes to the Mac.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since there's been an update. Snow Leopard was out, and that was sort of a minor update, but 10.7 should be bring some significant changes. Moving on, iOS 4.3, the Golden Master, a new rumored date has been announced. According to BGR, their sources are saying that it's coming March 2nd, which would coincide with the iPad 2 announcement. I think it only makes sense. It would make sense for Apple to preview 4.3 for the iPad 2. Maybe even talk about iOS 5, some features. Some of the stories out right now are talking about how, you know, Apple might preview iOS 5 on March 2nd.
I think it's possible. I think we will see 4.3 that day. Apple, now that the timing worked out, I thought we would have saw it already, but now that we haven't, Apple loves to get on stage and say, oh, look at these 3 new things we're introducing, and by the way, it's available today. So I think that's what we'll see, and I wouldn't be shocked to see a preview of iOS 5. They've done that in the past to kind of get developers' head in the game, and then they can roll it out even more so at the developers' conference. So I think 4.3 and a preview of 5 are a pretty good bet for next Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever that is.
Yeah. Back to this iPad then. I mean, March 2nd, Apple made this big announcement that they're going to introduce the iPad 2. They sent out some really interesting media invites. Basically, it was a picture of the iCal icon, and it sort of peels away in the corner, and you see a picture of an iPad.
And of course, with everything Apple, we've had blog post after blog post and article trying to gleam anything they can just from the picture, including everybody saying, well, that iPad looks identical. Why are they showing the old iPad? I'm not looking into that at all. But I do think iPad 2 is going to be like the 3GS. I don't think it's going to be a major change. I think this one's going to be the evolutionary minor upgrades, more power, add the cameras. That's what I'm expecting. But again, I'm just glad that we finally get an announcement. We were both worried last week that we were going to have to keep doing rumors every single week, and it was getting pretty ridiculous. It's funny that 2 days before this, everybody was saying, oh, well, there's no announcement because it's been delayed till June. I was never buying that. It never made sense for Apple to announce this product early because everybody knows it's coming. They only have that leeway when it's a new product. This is just an update. So my guess is they'll announce it next Wednesday, and it'll be for sale with kind of within the week, couple weeks at the most. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think this will be sort of an iPad refresh. I don't think Apple needs to come out with a brand new design so quickly. I mean, it's just only been a year. Typically, Apple will only make a big move and change hardware when competitors have finally caught up or when competitors have started to innovate. So, I mean, right now, the iPad is still, you know, the cream of the crop. Every time there is a review, people ask, you know, why should I get this versus the iPad? It is the standard. So I don't think Apple does need, you know, they don't need to come out with something revolutionary, but people do want cameras. They want, you know, maybe more storage capacity, a better display, thinner, right? These are the rumors that are coming out. I think it's inevitable that we'll see something like that happen on the 2nd.
Well, the strange thing too is, so the iPad comes out, and as we did a story a couple months ago, everybody's predictions were way off. Even the people who were really bullish on it couldn't even come close to predicting the numbers. Everybody said, hey, it's Apple trying to launch a product that nobody wants. It became a phenomenon. And now you see all these Android tablets popping up. And the thing that kills me about them is they're all trying to compete on specs, which has never been what Apple does. Apple, besides on their MacBooks, they don't ever discuss specs. Even when the new iPhones come out, they say, oh, it's running faster, or you can do this, but they don't ever talk numbers. So to me, it seems ridiculous that all these tablets are coming out and saying, oh, well, it's a Core 2 processor and we have a gig of RAM. Nobody knows what's in, the average person has no clue what the iPad's running. They just know it's working really well. So again, I don't think Apple has to do almost anything with the hardware. Throw the cameras on there because a few people want that, and make it run a little quicker, maybe make it a little bit lighter, a little bit thinner, and people are going to be thrilled, because with a tablet, it's all about the experience and the software, and that's where Apple just has it nailed right now. So Apple doesn't really care about the spec game. They've never got into the arms race from a tech standpoint. Even the MacBooks, I've had to have this argument so many times with people when I'm recommending a computer. The MacBooks always look a little dated technology-wise compared to some of the top-end PCs. But if you actually compare what they do and how they handle themselves, they're fine. It's Apple's never tried to play in that spec game. So I don't think we'll see anything that way. They're not going to change it with the iPad 2. It's going to be business as usual, few minor changes. 4.3 will bring a few new gestures that they'll show off, and then they'll tease the new software, and that's what it's all about. In some ways, the iPad's already been updated. When they put the multitasking software, that was almost like getting a new iPad. That completely changed how you used it. So that shows you that it's all about software, as far as I'm concerned right now.
Yeah, totally. And along with the software that comes, you know, the developers and the apps, I think a lot of the iPad's success does have to do with some of the very talented developers that have made some amazing apps for the iPad, and, you know, apps such as Flipboard, you know, some of the news apps, video apps, games too, Angry Birds, all that stuff. I mean, if you compare it to the Motorola Zoom, which has been released and reviews are being published on the web, I think Robert Scoble puts it really puts it best. He reviewed the Zoom. He likes it, but would he recommend his dad to get one? He said, no, not this year. And his answer, why? It's because the apps for the Android Honeycomb OS, they're not good right now. There's nothing good in the Android App Store compared to the App Store on iOS. And not only that, just to go back on the specs that you keep on mentioning, I mean, we've all grown up with technology and computers, and we've learned to sort of live with and accept the spec wars. But now it's getting to a point where specs and hardware doesn't really matter, because the speeds of CPUs and such have gotten to the point where, you know, it's all about the software now. I mean, people need to change software, and that's what Apple's been doing, and that's why they've been successful.
Yeah, as we were talking about before the show, the hardware has so far outpaced the software anyways. It doesn't matter how good these processors get, the software isn't designed right now to take advantage of it. And the other thing is, the spec game, that's a PC issue. The longer you stay with a Mac and the iPhone and the iPad, the further it goes away. My uncle was the type of guy who always wanted the latest PC, and, oh, I got this quad core, this and that. And I tell him all the time, and I'm not kidding, that his $3,000 PC, I would rather use a 800 megahertz eMac. They have an old eMac in their house. I'm like, when I come to your house, that's the computer I use. It doesn't matter how great your hardware is, it's still running this crappy Windows stuff that just doesn't compare to the Mac. And if you're just an everyday person and you need to check your email and do some web browsing, then you can get by with a PC. But in my line of work, when everything I do is heavily reliant on software, you come to love the smoothness and the stability and the eloquence of the Mac software. And it goes for the iOS too. It's the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know how much more we can talk about this, but, you know, software is definitely king now. Let's move on. Right now, let's move on to some of our app news. There's an app that I know you always get every year, and this is an app that you're probably going to be talking about a lot. That's the MLB At Bat 2011 app. Maybe you can tell us a bit more about why this app deserves to be on the home screen of iPhone and iPad users.
Yeah, it's funny. I this morning thought to myself, oh, it's about to be that time. There should be a new version. And I searched it in the App Store and I was shocked to see it. And then I was like, how did I miss it? Because every year I'm usually really excited and I'm logging onto the MLB website, seeing if they're previewing it. This year it just showed up. But the reason I love this app is, well, I mean, you got to be a baseball fan. But even if you're just a minor fan, it's almost worth checking out just as a template of how you handle a sports app. First of all, the price is absolutely right. The app is, it used to be $10. The last couple of years, I guess it's been $15 now. I forgot that it had gone up to $15 last year. But with that $15, you get audio of every single game that is played in the major leagues. Not only do you get every single game, you get home and away broadcasts. So if you're a Yankees fan or Blue Jays fan or whatever it is, you can listen to your home announcers, or you can listen to the away announcers. If it's a national game, they sometimes have the other. There's Spanish language, so you always get all the feeds that way. It has excellent built-in news, video highlights, scoreboards. It has the view with the pitches, the balls and strike counters. So not only can you listen to the game, but you just have these four or five tabs down at the bottom, and you can one click, you're at the box score. Then one page, you see the balls and strike as they're coming in with the pitch placement. There's, as highlights go, you get video highlights live right on your phone. And the other nice thing they've added last year is you can now get video of all the games, and how they handle the video is you get one or two games per day for free. Everybody gets those, but of course there's no guarantee it's going to be your team. It's just a couple random games a day. But if you subscribe to the Major League package through their website, which I think starts at about $50, $60 and goes up to $100-something, then you can actually get all the games on your phone. So I currently use the iPhone version, but I might go for the iPad version this year. But that's the only other little negative. They're not universal apps. So if you do want both, then you'll be into it for $30. But for $15, if you're a baseball fan, you can't ask for anything more. There's nothing this app is missing. And the quality is excellent. The sound quality, it never crashes. It's a really, really well done app. There's no complaints. I cannot think of a negative thing to say about the app.
Yeah, that's really cool that you get to listen to either the home or away announcers. Cause I know, with some, radio streams for hockey, you're forced to sort of listen to the radio station announcers announcing the game, not the announcers that would be announcing the game that would be live on TV. So it totally changes your sports experience when you get to hear those announcers that you're so used to.
And the great thing is, too, if we're losing so many of the great announcers, the classic guys, but there's still a few of them left. Like, one thing I love to do is I listen to my team, but then a lot of times later in the night, you can get the Vin Scully games, the Dodgers games, and just to be able to hear these classic guys, and they're all getting old, and unfortunately we're losing them every year, but it's so great to be able to get that information. And as you said, there's certain announcers I just hate, so it's nice to be able to go to my home ones. I'm a Yankees fan, and it used to kill me every time I had to listen. I'd watch a game and they were playing the Blue Jays, because I just hate, even though they're Canadian, I just cannot stand the Toronto Blue Jays announcers, either on TV or radio. So the fact that I don't have to hear them anymore, I can get my John Sterling is good for me.
Who are the announcers for the Blue Jays? I've been sort of out of the loop. I don't know if it was it Rod Black or
I can't remember even the guy I can't stand. I mean, they had one guy who did the color years ago, and he passed away. I liked him, but then I can't remember who the new guy they have now on the Fan 590. I just can't, nothing about him I like. I don't like his voice. I don't like it just rubs me the wrong way. You know, everybody has their hangups. I can't remember the guy's name right now, but I'm just glad to be away with him, and I can listen to my home Yankees broadcast anytime I want. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is, too, it has perfect use of like the push notifications. So you select the team you want. I select, hey, favorite team, Yankees, and you get push notifications that you can have everything from just, hey, the game's starting now, to there's options to have every time the inning changes, or every time there's a score, or every time there's a major highlight. You can pick or choose what you want to be notified of. And it's, again, even if you're mildly interested in baseball, it's a phenomenal app.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, that's, I've heard, I mean, ever since that MLB at-bat app was announced, people have been talking about it nonstop. And like you said, I can see why it offers so much value. So what's this other app that you're talking about, Momento? That's an app that you mentioned before.
Yeah, that's an app that I picked on the podcast before. It's a daily journal app, but as I mentioned in my initial review, the reason I really like it is it pulls in all your various stuff from your social media and then allows you to back it up. So Twitter, the API only lets you save so many tweets. Facebook, you can only go back so many weeks. And if those services ever close, I use it basically just to pull in all that information, and it has the best searching that I've ever seen in an app of its thing. So I can type in anything and, 2 years ago I went to this concert and here's the picture. It had a major update this week. They listed a whole bunch of features that I didn't even really pay attention to or notice. The big update is that you can now bring in your Instagram photos, which is nice. And again, it brought in all my photos from day one. So again, if Instagram's API only lets you save so many, or God forbid it ever gets closed down or whatever, you now have a way to kind of have everything in one app. And it's, like I said, a really good interface, and it allows you to back it all up, and it has a mechanism to store all your information, back it up through iTunes, and then you can always have all your your pictures and your Facebook messages and your check-ins and all that stuff in one handy app. I like it a lot.
Nice. All right. I'm going to mention a couple apps that I've been sort of playing around with. One that I finally got onto my home screen, that's the app called Wonderlust. There was a huge update today. This app is another sort of it's one of those to-do apps where you can just, it's like a task manager. But the cool thing here is you can set up push notifications to remind yourself of certain to-dos that you want to do. You can make lists. You can star them. Very innovative. It's pretty clear on how to use this. Very simple. It's an elegant interface. So if you're looking for a to-do app, check out Wonderlust. The best thing about it is that it's still completely free. So definitely check it out. It's Wonderlust. That's W-U to spell wonder and then Wonderlust. Sorry, Wonderlust.
I was going
to
correct you because people might be finding a whole different app. It was Wonderlust, but
sorry, that was a test. It's Wonderlust. So that's a really cool app. One more app that's been getting a lot of press lately. They've had a huge sort of PR push. That's this app called Hipmunk. Hipmunk is a really innovative app for booking trips. It lets you see your search results for booking a from and to trip. You can see your results in landscape mode or portrait mode, and it will list all of your flights by price. It will also list them by agony, which basically refers to the total travel time. You can also list your results by departure date, length. It's really easy to see the layout of trips that you want to book. And to book it, you just tap on the price, you pick your trips, and then you can just click on the link and buy through the links. They're like orbits, or you can get an email linked, email booking link emailed to you, or you can finish your booking at your computer as it gives you a secret phrase. So it's called Hipmunk. Pretty neat. Definitely check it out. So Hipmunk and Wonderlust. One more app that's more sort of Canadian specific. That's the CBC News app. CBC News actually had a huge makeover on the website, and they kind of coordinated this with their new iPhone app. Now the app is buggy. I'll tell you that. It does crash when you go to certain sections, such as, I can't remember, I think I went to sports or something and the app just crashed. But I think there's been an update that's supposed to fix that. Some people are saying that it still crashes. But what I love about the CBC News app is the homepage. It's a really nice UI. You can also see videos that are actually straight from the newscast on TV. So you also get weather and everything. So if you want to catch some news clips straight from the TV, it's available within this app, and it plays right on your iPhone. So if you want to check out some news, CBC News, that's one of my picks.
Yeah, I haven't tried that yet, but I'm going to. I hope it is good, because for some reason, all the Canadian, whether it be newspapers, ebook readers, any kind of content like global and these different video apps, they always lag so far behind what we're seeing out of other countries, especially the US. We have just not as many developers, or they've been slow to do it, if they're having internal people design them and they're not as up to date. But I don't know how many people checked out the news apps last week, but if you tried the Washington Post and then the Toronto Sun, you could see a real difference in how these things are designed. So hopefully we start catching up in that department. And I will add on to Wonderlust. It is a great app. I pretty much, not exaggerating to say, I've tried almost every to-do app there is. I'm a to-do freak. I'm the guy who read Getting Things Done by David Allen. I'm really into all that stuff. And Wonderlust was free, looked great, but was really limited. And now they're starting to take care of that stuff. There's a free Mac app to sync between the two. They now have proper notifications. So it's coming a long way. And both the Mac app and the iPhone app are free. So it's worth trying out. If you need syncing to any third parties like to Doodle Do or Dropbox or any of these other syncing things. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any of that right now, but it will sync between your Mac and your laptop. And it also has and sync to the iPhone as well. And it also has a new sharing feature, which you can share certain lists with another person and allow them to not only view the lists, but update them. So if you need to collaborate with people, they've added that as well. So you can't beat free. It really looks great. It's got a nice new icon as well, which always helps. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Cool. Yeah, I've been playing around with it, and the interface is great. It's a lot of fun. I might have time to talk about one more app. Here is one that will help you make really easy ringtones straight on your iPhone. It's called GeoRing. I briefly went over GeoRing on the blog. It's from the makers of Dataman, which is an excellent data tracker that keeps track of your data on your iPhone. The cool thing about GeoRing is that you can just pick any song from your library, and you can choose when you want it to start and when you want it to stop. And GeoRing will just, you know, you can select it as your ringtone. The only setup involved is that you need to download one silent ringtone, and you just need to sync that in iTunes onto your phone. And once you've gotten that, to select your customized ringtone, you just select the silent ringtone, and that will play any ringtones that you do create. You can also make playlists out of your ringtones right on your iPhone. So for a lot of people that want to make ringtones, GeoRing does it. It's $1.99, though. I think it is worth it. It will also actually track the geolocation of your calls and logs the duration of each call down to the exact second. Some issues that people have had with GeoRing is that it runs in the background, and people complain about battery issues. I haven't used it long enough to see if there have been any battery issues, but on the whole, it seems to be a pretty solid app to make easy ringtones. I mean, that's one of the things that people always have trouble with. So check it out. That's called GeoRing.
Yeah, I'll add on as far as ringtones go. A, don't ever buy ringtones. There's so many things to make them easily now from your iTunes Music. To me, it would be crazy to ever buy musical ringtones again. Most of the ones in the App Store work really well. They now, because of the new features in the iOS, they now let you take music from your iPod and do it. The only problem is the way Apple restricts access to the address book and the phone, you can't actually import them. So this app is trying to work its way around that by playing a silent ringtone and then switching over to this app. What I actually recommend is if you're on a Mac, on the Mac App Store, there's an app called Ringer and another one called iRingtones. Both are 99 cents. I'd be hard-pressed to pick which one I like better. Probably like iRingtones just a little bit better. But what's great about both of these apps is they're 99 cents. One click, the app is open. One click, you pick the song you want. And then it has the little guides to pick which part of the song. You can preview it, hit save, and it automatically imports it into your iTunes with the proper tags, the artist, and all that stuff. And then the next time you sync your phone, it's on there. Whereas the iPhone ones, you create them on the phone, and then you have to sync them to your iPhone. Then you're syncing the back anyways. I actually find the way I prefer to do it is just use either of these apps in the App Store. And there's other apps on there for $5 and $10. Some of them I've even tried in the past, and they're not better, if not actually not as good. I find these two the best, Ringer and iRingtones, both 99 cents. I think that's probably the best way to do your ringtones, unless you really want to just have different ones all the time and you want to do them right on your phone, then try it with the app Gary just recommended. But if you just want to make ringtones, try those two apps. And the other thing, in case someone still doesn't know this by now, the iPhone is nice because you can assign different ringtones to all your different contacts. So that's another fun thing that a lot of people don't realize. And then they do. Every person who calls me has a different ringtone. Then you always know when you want to ignore that call or double tap the top and send the person a voicemail. It's handy.
Yeah, definitely. Any other apps that you'd like to recommend, Justin?
Yeah, I got a couple here. A couple for the iPhone that kind of go together is everybody uses Google for search. But 10 years ago, we all used Yahoo or something else, and Google was the plucky little underdog. Now there's a couple other search engines popping up, and both of them I really like. These are so good that I'd be tempted to actually switch away from Google if they had better integration into the toolbars. But they both have great iPhone apps. One's called Blekko. It's B-L-E-K-K-O. And the other's called DuckDuckGo, which is the worst name I've ever heard of for a search engine. It's an ugly icon. It's an ugly app. It's an ugly website, but it's awesome. You type in a search into Google, into DuckDuckGo, you get this cool little thing at the top that kind of describes what it is. So if you're searching for U2, it has a little paragraph, hey, U2's this band, then it goes in. And what I love about both of these is they're kind of curated by people. They're not just like algorithms like Google. So Google's great, don't get me wrong. It's still probably the overall best search engine. But what happens now, if you notice, every time you search for Google, we're also trained to think the top two or three or four results are the best results. But if you type into something in Google, you know the first or second result is going to be the official page, which is great. You want that. You know the second or third or fourth result is going to be Wikipedia. You know the fifth or sixth result is going to be some kind of Amazon or iTunes to buy the thing. And sometimes you are now forced to go several deep to kind of get that great fan page or some other great material on it. Whereas these two apps, I find if the Wikipedia page is crap and there's nothing much to it, they don't rate those automatically as high. So you don't kind of see the same results over and over again. And especially with Blekko, I haven't totally got into it, but it has a way of, if you sign up and have an account with them, you can use these slash tags. So you could easily say, hey, you're looking for the iPhone podcast. You type it in, you add your own slash tag, that's a Canadian podcast or that's an iPhone podcast. Then when you add those key terms to other things, it kind of allows you to group things and search things by these tags. It also allows you to easily look at it from a time standpoint or from certain tags. If you want to do, say, iPhone podcast slash whatever or iPhone slash OS 4.3, because it just makes searching even easier. And I find the results just a little less spammy, not those standard things that Google tends to put in, whether they deserve it or not. So if you're into that kind of thing, like I said, I could see myself switching to them, but unfortunately you have to use their apps instead of, there's no search bar built right into Safari yet. So I'm hoping down the road, some people, Apple or whoever, will build these in and give them a choice, because I like both of them. So both free, both worth checking out if you just want to have a little different results when you're searching.
I think that's a great name, DuckDuckGo. Oh, yeah. It's so stupid that you just can't forget about
true,
it.
That's true, that part, yeah.
And you have to tell your friends about it. It's called DuckDuckGo. I don't think I can forget that now. Okay, all right, cool. Well, I mean, I think this has been a great episode of the iPhone podcast. We've gone over some news that we think that you should find important. We've talked about some app news and some recommendations and app picks. Once again, thank you for listening to the iPhone podcast. This was episode 28. Please rate us on iTunes. We've really enjoyed your ratings. They've made us laugh a lot. You can also follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. You can follow me at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and you can follow Justin at twitter.com/JustinLouie. That's L-U-E-Y for Louie. Just a quick note, next week, on Wednesday, I believe it's Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Apple is going to be announcing details of the next iPad. We think it's going to be an important day. Justin and I are going to find some time, and we're going to just quickly recap what we think came out of the announcement and any sort of important details that you must know about. So if you want to find out some of the top news about that announcement, come back next week and expect a short sort of iPad 2 media event recap.
Sounds good. We'll be here.
All right. So thanks again for listening, everyone. And we will see you next week.